My name's Peter Williams. I'm a biblical scholar and I have the privilege of being the principal and CEO of Tyndale House Centre for Biblical Research in Cambridge, England.
Dr. Peter Williams. Peter, good to see you here.
Good to be with you.
I'm in your home this time. Last time I think we talked or we did a podcast, I think you were with us somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but anyway, it's a delight to be here. My first time to Tyndale House. It's an amazing facility.
It is.
It's got a great history.
Yeah. So we go back to actually the time of the Second World War. And it's really interesting that Tyndale House began in 1944 as a center for Bible research. Before D-Day, before the Normandy landings. So people were thinking ahead and they were thinking, how can we have a center which will foster Bible scholarship in service of the church?
Mm. And so that 1945, a lot of great scholars have come through here and have fellowshipped here. And you've got a wonderful library that has a great history. You've got accommodations for some folks as well. But one of the things you're working on these days is an initiative for international scholars, which I'm excited about. I want our people to know about it because it's so important these days. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, what we find is that Bible resources aren't equally spread around the world. Mm. There are plenty of places where people don't have access to a really good library or the opportunity to spend extended time studying the scriptures at a high level. And so we like to bring people in from around the place, around the world. We've had up to 10 in from Cuba studying biblical languages really intensively and then going back to their own context. Of course, their life in Cuba can be quite hard. You're trying to feed your family on not very much money. And if you're a pastor there, you're not going to get much extended time to study because people are going to be knocking on your door all the time and needing you to do things. And so people actually need to come out of that for a while to study. But we've also have people, we've got someone from Egypt right now. Again, it's a different setting there. He's looking to plant churches and lead a seminary there, and we're able to get behind him. And he's able to get the experience of working academically at a very high level because we're next to one of the world's leading universities. It's just, you know, a few hundred yards away. And so you have the elite context here, but the Christian support and mission-mindedness that you have in a Christian community.
Hmm. So when you think about where you've been in the past, it's mainly served North American European scholars, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now the center of gravity of the Christian movement, Christian faith, has moved south to global south. And that's come representing a lot of challenges, like you said, because most of the seminaries and most of the resources are in Europe, North America. So now we have the challenge of getting great resources and people to those locations.
Yes, and I see it as a challenge and an opportunity. So, say in Africa, the average age is 10 years younger than the average age in Europe, but the church is also growing. That's a great opportunity because you have youth on the side of the church. It's also a great stretch because you have a lot of poverty as you have a young population. And you have a growing church without necessarily having the leaders who've had the sort of teaching people have had, say, in the Western church in the past. So lots and lots of zeal, lots of commitment in a way which we often lack. But there's a need for working in partnership across the global church. It's not one part of the church telling another church or another part what to do, but really to work internationally in partnership and say, how can we bring what God has resourced us with together? So if one part of the world has been given youth and another part has been given libraries and a certain intellectual heritage of thought leadership, can those two come together? So I spent 10 days last year in Brazil and specifically just looking to find scholars for the future there. Church growing fast. They can't train pastors fast enough, but you also need people who are going to train the pastors. So who are the people who are going to be leading in the seminaries? And so there's a huge work to do in so many different countries where we need more people who are really well trained in order to help the church. I think what happens with medical training is that everyone across the world understands this takes many, many years. And so just about every society where you have trained doctors, those trained doctors have spent many, many years training. That's not the case when it comes to theological education. People are not resourced as well, and the church does need to step in there.
Yeah, all you need is the Spirit, right, in some context. That's the way it's sort of understood. Well, but in fact, you need to renew the mind, you need to grow the mind, you need to deepen the faith. That comes through the process of education.
Yeah, so certainly we've been thinking about how can we connect ourselves as an institution with more and more different places. We've got a lot to learn. So yes, we bring a certain amount. People can come here and spend a good sabbatical time learning alongside other people, often who've studied at a very high level, got good levels of ancient languages, they're able to read manuscripts, all this sort of thing. But we have so much to learn from parts of the persecuted church. They could often understand the Bible better than we can. You know, it's because it's not understood out of books. It's a whole number of things coming together. They've got experiences which are give more insight than many of the of the books. And so that's where I think it really is about bringing people together. And a delight we have here at Tinder House is just having people from different parts of the world all together. And then they make a network. Even after people leave here, they have friendships around the place.
And those friendships last a long time.
Yeah.
My Dr. Father Earl Ellis spoke about this place so glowingly over the years because of the connections that he made and the mission of it. And to some degree, I think he's inspired us in Houston to think about having a residential theological library there. It's only 5,000 miles away, that's why we've made it possible for so many good scholars to come our way, and we look forward to the time that you come back. So somebody comes here, and they are ready to do some work. Are they affiliated with any of the colleges? Are they working on a degree themselves? Are they taking courses here at Tyndale House? How does that work?
Yeah, so we have a whole mixture of different ways of working, but we're a residential research library, we're a worshipping community. So someone could do a PhD in Cambridge University, and so they're registered with Cambridge University, that's where their qualification comes from. But they might be physically in our space for 3 years, they might have a family, and they actually live in our space. They're part of our community, so every day they're spending time with us, and they have the chance of having fellowship and being shaped that way. And yet at the same time, their education is from an elite university. The piece of paper they'll come away with at the end says of the degree they've got. So we don't give out degrees. And one of the nice things about not giving out degrees ourselves is we're not in a rival relationship with any institution. So it doesn't matter where it is in the world. People can do their degree at that place and spend some of their time with us, and we're not trying to poach them. So someone could be doing a PhD in a university in Houston and spend a month with us or anywhere. That's a great thing, great position to be in. We're there to be cheerleaders, if you like, to people taking quite a lonely path of scholarship. It's often very difficult. You have to make financial sacrifices, often to pursue further studies. It can be lonely because not many people understand you, and the more you learn about one thing, the fewer people you have you can talk to about it at all.
Yeah, it gets to be a very small number of people, finally, who have really a strong interest in what you're doing sometimes.
Yeah, so that then being able to take people on that journey is important. We have a coffee time every day at 11, and we have chapel time, and so people.
We had great strawberries and shortbread today. Yeah. That was fantastic.
Yeah, we often have cake or celebrate. Even when someone's leaving, you know, we'll have a cake, not to celebrate them leaving, but just to mark that. And so there's a community together, and a lot of the people in the library will be quite introverted. You know, they're scholars, but when they get amongst themselves, amongst their own, they're able to open up, and there isn't too much one-upmanship here, because everyone knows that everyone else in the room is smart, and so that actually helps people be a bit more down to earth, a bit more honest and open.
Well, we felt that today, and one of the chaps that I think we were talking about, you felt like he had come from Harvard. And he said, well, you found out that he could be humble, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it is a really nice thing here is coming across people who genuinely are brilliant at what they do, that they can be the top in the world at what they do, and yet they don't see that as too big a thing. I mean, you know, I think everyone's made by God unique. They're uniquely valuable. And if they're alive, they have work that they can do for God. And that's a great thing.
One of the things you said is this is a worshiping community as well as one that gathers together and maybe collaborates on projects and such. Tell us a little bit about that worshiping community, because they come from all over the world. They come from a lot of different worship styles. What they're used to.
Yeah. Right? So we have chapel during the university term time, and that tends to be led by the staff of the institution, and then we have prayers of a more informal kind outside university term time, and that's led by the readers. And so in a sense they've got two slightly different styles to that, but that what that means is in a sense we're able to say have a come and pitch in approach to those who are readers without, you know, the same risk of saying, well, just share what you like. And we have an open door policy, so you know, people who from different persuasions can come through. So we find most people are Christ-centered, wanting to serve the church, but we also have other people come in, and we want them to join in the community and have that well led. But I think another thing is through the teaching that we try and do in chapel is we're not trying to communicate new information to people because they've got plenty of information. We're trying to stir their hearts, stir their affections for Christ, and help them think through what it means for them as, let's say, an egghead, somebody who's got quite a lot of learning, to use that God-given geekiness, that God-given ability to serve Christ. And so that's particularly where we focus a lot of our teaching. What's it like in the academy? What are the dangers to our hearts of knowledge or of our position or what we're doing? Those are the sorts of things we want to challenge people on.
What are the challenges that you find people who are coming from Africa or Asia facing back at home when they go back? Because inevitably they go back home to their churches, to their organizations. What kind of challenges are they facing?
Well, there can be all sorts of challenges. I'm thinking of a man from Madagascar we had last year who people in his diocese in the previous year or two had died of starvation. So we're actually talking about the deepest and most obvious material needs that he was dealing with. When he goes back to the seminary he leads, one of the things he's got to do is make sure all of the students are fed. They can't charge any fees because the students don't have any money.
They need money for food.
So he's got to, you know, raise money for that. So that can be that sort of situation. Then you can have people from another setting, which is quite a bit better resourced. I think about, you know, we have various people from Ethiopia, they might come from Addis Ababa, and there are quite a few theological colleges there, and they are more looking for the book resources that they may not have access to, the extended study time, and the interaction with ideas from outside their own setting. So that's really what they're looking for. So I think it can vary a huge amount. Some of the We have people from mainland China here. Obviously, they can get some more academic freedom here, but they may be going back to that context. And there's certainly a lot of emphasis and resource put behind education in mainland China. So they're not in any way short of any money in our experience. But again, they don't have many generations of Christian theological reflection in the Chinese language. There's not a lot there. So I think there can just be different needs.
You talked about persecution earlier, and I taught a course this past summer in South Africa, and one of the students that I had was going to be going back to Sudan, and there were all sorts of, you know, ramifications to what was going to be all the possibilities there. Do you find people who've come here who are a little reticent to go back because particularly the problem of persecution?
We have issues with war zones, so we do have people who come from, you know, very close to war zones, Democratic Republic of Congo and so on. And So that's one thing. And just the life that they're living here is a temporary reprieve from the insecurity they have back home. We also have people who can come from settings where it's hard to be a Christian openly. It's less easy to talk about them, but we do have some.
Yeah. Well, you were talking earlier about how they sometimes have some of the majority world scholars that come here have a greater sense of what the scripture's about, because very often we forget that the scriptures are written to people who would be persecuted in their lifetimes, and a lot of that's written against the background of persecution.
Yeah, so I think it can happen with persecution. It can also happen with other things. I go back again to my Madagascan friend who lives in southern Madagascar and would go to preach and take the gospel to a brand new village. It would be 5 days of walking. And you literally walk until it's the evening and you come across a village and you ask for hospitality and you have rice in your backpack to share with them, and people give you hospitality. These are not Christians, but they are people who welcome you into the house. And it struck me how close this was to what we're seeing with Jesus sending out his disciples and saying, go to the place where they welcome you. And here was a man who had lived that, and I had the privilege of talking to him, firsthand. And I was learning from him. I was learning, right, this is going on, this is how it works, and how, extraordinary that is. So it's very humbling to read the scriptures with people who just see so many different things because of their cultural angle, and you realize I'm missing out a lot just by sitting in the Western world reading books. There is so much more to see, and I need my brothers and sisters to help me with that.
Yeah. If anybody's interested in knowing more about Tyndale House, how would they do that?
TyndaleHouse.com. So that's our website, and you should have resources there, newsletter, free magazine. We've got a journal. We have podcasts, so plenty to find out.
Plenty of information out there. And if people are deeply interested, and I know some who might be, in relating to your international student initiative, is that information on there as well? Or is that particular to another
Yes, way? So you can find it. The information is mainly written for people who might be coming.
Okay.
And you can look on how to book a visit, but if anyone wants to find out more, they can write to us, and we're happy to share that. We've also got a US 501c3 through which people can support the work. And
so donations are welcome then.
Absolutely, sure. That's how it runs.
Always. Is, yeah. Dr. Peter Williams, thank you for being with us today on the Stone Chapel.
Thank you.
What a great conversation today. I hope you agree. Only 168 hours until the next podcast drops. I can't wait. Subscribe to our podcast. Rate us. It will give other people the opportunity to find us. Tell a friend about us as well. Thanks to the Lanier Foundation, Jocelyn Solis, Phil Keggy, and Kathy Capes, who helped make this podcast possible. Till next time, thanks for listening. Stand by for a nugget of wisdom from Dr. Peter Williams.
I've been studying the words of Jesus, and he is simply the most amazing reader of Scripture. If you want to understand the Old Testament, you need to look really carefully at the words of Jesus and the way he teaches us to submit our lives to God's word. And I just say, I read the Gospels again and again, reading the Old Testament, and it's such a delight to see what he sees in the Scriptures.